This is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. And so our journey through time ends as we come to the concluding chapter of our series celebrating the 50th anniversary of Radio Netherlands. Having reached our present decade, my focus is to highlight the new generation of young broadcasters who have widened the horizons of the radio documentary, launched a succession of audience-grabbing programs, and filled our cupboard with a distinguished collection of international radio awards.
With Pete Myers as your guide, we focus on our present decade as it draws to a close. The 90s.
At the end of the last century, Oscar Wilde wrote that the only duty we have to history is to rewrite it. When this decade is done and we're recovering from our millennium hangovers, the historians will get round to the rewrites and finding smart lines to define the 1990s. As I'm not a historian, I can avoid the pitfalls of definition and focus this last episode on Radio Netherlands, which marked its 50th year by streamlining its operations and opening its doors to a new generation of broadcasters who have enhanced our reputation with their creative talent. So, let's begin our journey at the dawn of the decade when this demand from an outraged world was finally answered in South Africa.
Free Nelson Mandela! Free! 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 Free Nelson Mandela!
Today, the majority of South Africans, black and white, recognize that apartheid has no future. It has to be ended by our own decisive mass action. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society. If needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die.
The spellbinding moment in February 1990 when Nelson Mandela walked free after 27 years in prison and addressed his people in Cape Town. At last, the world heard his voice again, and what we heard spelt the end of apartheid in South Africa. Dismantling apartheid, reconciling the races, and holding democratic elections that led to black majority rule was long and painful. But the road to his presidency was strewn with goodwill and support from Mandela's universal supporters. The Dutch gave him a rapturous welcome when he came here in 1990, and 4 years later he returned for a Dutch TV fundraiser evening to help finance his ANC election drive. Before an adoring audience, he answered questions from a group of schoolchildren and was asked by this kid how he managed to survive 27 years in jail without going mad or becoming bitter.
Heeft u iets gedaan? Want in zo lang in de gevangenis, daar kan je toch bijna niet normaal uitkomen.
I was able to survive because of the love which young people like yourself supported the ideas for which we fought. And a cause supported by the youth can never fail. That is why I came out. Nelson Rodesasa Mandela, do hereby swear to be faithful to the Republic of South Africa
Will you please raise your right hand and say, so help me God.
So help me God.
The inauguration of Mandela, South Africa's first black president, was a milestone of the 90s. And there were others. Germany reunited, Gorbachev fell from grace, the Soviet Union fell apart, and Boris Yeltsin popped out of a vodka bottle to control the Russian bear. Mrs. Thatcher was ousted by her own Tory party, and 1,000 champagne corks exploded in Brussels. Kuwait was conquered by Saddam Hussein, liberated by a desert storm, and baby boomer Bill Clinton checked into the White House with saxophone. Now, all of these headline events were covered by our Newsline team and network of global correspondents. And for the first time in our 50-year existence, the infrastructure existed to cover the news. In this case, shortly after an Israeli Boeing 747 crashed into a crowded Amsterdam housing complex after taking off from Schiphol Airport, killing over 40 people and injuring hundreds.
Stunned residents of the Bijlmer section of Amsterdam are not able to awaken from the nightmare that began when an El Al cargo jet slammed into two apartment buildings. All that remains of 80 flats is smoldering rubble. Here and there, reminders that these were homes, a twisted, melted bicycle, a red sneaker, a teddy bear. These were the sights that greeted Dutch Queen Beatrix when she arrived at the crash site. The recovery process has begun as crews use giant cranes to remove layer upon layer of collapsed, charred concrete.
The reporter, Rena Miller, who for a short spell was head of the English Service Department, the first woman to get the job. As a European station, the 90s saw us take a more active interest in European issues, personalities, and attitudes. Holland played host to two major Euro summits, Maastricht in 91 and Amsterdam in 97, where EU leaders wrestled with issues like political and monetary union, common currency, and sovereignty. Thanks to our news team, listeners were blitzed with soundbites, commentary, statements, and hype as the politicians used the media to get their message across. Few of us could actually remember what they said now, but on the sovereignty issue, veteran German politician Helmut Schmidt's outburst is still priceless.
This argument about sovereignty belongs to former decades and former centuries. If we are afraid to sacrifice some of our national sovereignties, we should never have started on Jean Monnet's plans more than 40 years ago. So this argument about the necessity of maintaining one's sovereignty is bullshit. And I mean what I say.
It's a particular honor for me because in my rush to start Microsoft, I was not able to complete my formal education. And so In a real sense, I'm a school dropout, although officially I'm still on leave from Harvard University.
Bill Gates, who transformed the information superhighway in the 90s, making him the world's richest man and picking up an honorary degree from the Netherlands Business School. Not bad for a dropout. The 90s on this network was shaped by a group of new and youthful international broadcasters.
The Dutch society is a very communicative one. The people are used to talk with each other, they are used to meet each other.
The Dutch have a tendency to advertise, to be very moral, and having this tendency to go out and preach and tell everybody that they should do like we do.
What has 42,000 square kilometers of territory and a population of over 15 million people? The answer, the Netherlands. That's the focus week in, week out on Sounds Interesting with me, Robert Chessel, every Sunday and Wednesday here on Radio Netherlands.
The style is 90s, but the focus of a show like Sounds Interesting has not changed in 50 years. It's there to keep listeners in touch with the Dutch.
Anything can happen in the next half hour.
As the new generation moved in, we acknowledged the influence and importance of youth culture in Holland and Europe.
I bid you welcome.
There is always a cliffhanger on the end.
Who is that man who exposes himself?
I will not flinch from war. I will not flinch.
Captain, what do we do?
Fascinating.
Every painter also made erotic art. Roughly speaking.
You're listening to Roughly Speaking, the voice of Young Holland and Europe's premier youth program. Hosting this week, Simone Wymans, and this voice, Max Olenschlager.
Hi and welcome. This week's
under the guidance of Howard Shannon, we created an award-winning show with attitude and high energy that also gives young Dutch newcomers to radio a chance to shine, amuse, and occasionally shock. That ability to titillate and even shock some segments of our audience is not new. It's been around for over 20 years. All we simply did was reflect a society that has no qualms in calling a condom a condom. The new generation gave us shows with style, flair, and personality. And when Maggie Ann, Dearest John, a heady combination of haggis and haldi, crafted the award-winning East of Eden, they jetted to Milan and did what any sensible woman would do in Italy, shopped till they dropped.
I don't know about you, Maggie, but I'm going to miss the style, the cappuccinos, the beautiful boys, the beautiful people, the shopping. Hey, speaking of which, we have half an hour to fit in some last-minute shopping before our flight. If I could only find something nice, you know, to go with that little black number I got the other day, I'll be really, really happy with
dear,
our stay
you
here.
You can't be serious. You've cleaned out half the clothes shops already, and you've got more than your luggage allowance now. And besides, we don't have that much time.
No, it'll just be 20 minutes, really, I promise. I'll see you soon.
Final call. All passengers to Amsterdam, please proceed immediately to gate number 5, where this plane is now ready for departure. Final call. Would passengers Air and Sujan please go immediately to gate number 5, where the departure of flight number 284 is imminent. Passengers Air and Sujan, immediately, please.
Dira, get out of the duty-free now!
I like a nice cup of tea in the morning.
You bet.
Or to start the day, you see. And at 11:30, well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea.
In your company.
Well, it started with starts in 1927, then moved to Tom Meyer in the 70s. After 22 years as host of the Sunday Happy Station, Tom retired, and the old girl landed in my lap. With the understanding that I'd only do the show for a couple of years, I took Jonathan Gruber as my partner in crime. And as the last two hosts of a Sunday institution, we steamrolled Sunday to the edge. An approach that outraged the traditional Sunday listener and delighted the 90s crowd. We even gave those two East of Edam dames a run for their money when Clarissa and Maxime arrived on the scene.
Us modern girls, we love gay guys. I have hundreds and hundreds of gay friends. Yes, I do.
Well, darling, dressed like that, what else can you expect? Actually, you know, I must tell you quite frankly, it's a generation thing, you know. Apart from my hairdresser, dear Cedric, I don't know any gays. After all, I was brought up in an era when men were men and women were women. And today it's all so complicated.
Now, wait. No, actually, it makes a great deal of sense. Because you can talk with a gay man about sex and other men in, like, a non-threatening way. And you can get a man's opinion in a non-threatening way. And you can be intimate with them in a non-threatening way. And they're usually so well-groomed and good-looking and handsome and... Actually, I wish I'd get threatened every now and then.
Well, me too, darling. At my age, I never do. But I can accept your reasoning. But, you know, you have such ghastly role models today.
Oh, no, really. I suppose it was better in your day.
Of course it was better. Can you imagine John Wayne in a frock?
For a night.
Oh, I like that.
Haughty.
Okay, everybody. Happy Station. September the 17th, 1995, the very last one. Goodbye. Bye-bye.
And in her 67th year, the old girl was finally retired forever. Sunday took on a new look with Wide Ankle, Sincerely Yours, Sounds Interesting, and the successful Siren Song, Dearest of John being one of the diamonds in our tiara. Now, you'll note I've repeated the words award-winning. I've stressed it to highlight the fact that over the years, our broadcasters have picked up numerous gold, silver, and bronze prizes at prestigious radio festivals, in particular the New York International Radio Competition. This decade has seen us distinguish ourselves in the development of the documentary. Our output is prolific, wide-ranging, and topical. I've only time for a few examples, like this winner, when Michelle Ernstein spent the time with squatters in Amsterdam and found herself under siege by a solitary cop attempting to evict the squatters.
At 9 o'clock on the dot, a single policeman along with a bailiff appear in front of the squat. Coffee cups are set aside and everyone whips on their balaclavas and starts flinging paint bombs from the balcony. So we've just heard on the radio that the police are coming. Everyone's getting the paint bombs out. I'm standing on the balcony.
Burning note!
Needless to say, the policeman and the bailiff quickly hurried off, as did two men in a garbage truck sent around to clean out the squat, presumably once the lone policeman had single-handedly broken through the heavily barricaded door and forced 10 rebellious squatters out onto the road. All was quiet again.
Nothing was quiet on the Balkan front, as the former Yugoslavia plunged into an appalling civil war that horrified the civilized world. In 92, Eric Boschman was one of the first radio journalists to make a program on rape as a war strategy by Serbian forces in Bosnia. In this award-winning documentary, an elderly couple told their story, how together with other people in their home, they were dragged from their beds late one night.
They have ordered us to get in our night clothes out of the house, and we had to stand there waiting for the, what they will say to do with us. He says there were six women between them, two families together, and while they were standing there, they ordered his wife to enter inside the house to look for the golden money. They have put a knife under his chin, on his throat, and they told women, you better find Deutschmarks and money and gold, because if you do not bring absolutely everything you own, we are going to cut his head off. He said, while they were holding a knife under my throat, I imagined that women are inside searching for what they have said, money and gold, while actually they have been raped most viciously over and over and over again. His wife and all the other women.
No one who heard that program will forget it. Throughout the 90s, Boschman has enriched this network with his impressive output that has ranged from the killing fields of Rwanda, the exploitation of child labor in Pakistan, to the devastating spread of AIDS in India. In the process, he's won 8 major awards and emerged as a champion of the voiceless. With foresight in 95, before the subject attracted royal patronage and a Nobel Peace Prize, he was alerting the world to the vicious brutality of landmines in Angola.
There's nothing worse than seeing a little girl or a little boy walking around with no legs or no hands. I think it's the saddest thing in the world.
There are an estimated 100 million landmines, seeds of death, planted in the earth. And in talking to one of the experts who risk their lives daily to clear these weapons, Eric was told what to do in case of an explosion.
In the event of an explosion or any accident, stand still and wait for further instructions. Just make sure that you're not injured yourself. If you are, draw attention. Otherwise, just stand still. wait for instructions. I'm a trained paramedic, and we've got a trained paramedic with us. He's got the medical kit and a stretcher. If something happens, you'll be taken to the MSF hospital, which is around the corner from here. They'll stabilise you, and then we'll get you flown out to Luanda, and I've got a sat phone to call South Africa.
Goodbye, England's rose. May you ever grow in our hearts. You were the grace that placed itself where lives were torn apart. You called out to our country, and you whispered to those in pain. Now you belong to heaven, and the stars spell out your name. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will.
Elton John's eulogy to Diana, Princess of Wales, whose untimely death was a tragedy so overpowering that it unleashed a universal tidal wave of grief and shock that remains a defining moment of the 90s. The death of the princess, whose compassion made her more royal than the royals in Britain, shook the stodgy House of Windsor, who kept a regal silence till British public opinion forced them to join the 20th century. Our brilliant veteran columnist, Robert Green, assessed the situation.
It's a bit thick for the British people, bunch of class-ridden serfs that they are, to suddenly expect their royals to clutch handkerchiefs, sob in public and appear human, when for many, many years they've oohed and aahed in admiration at the stiff upper lippiness of the Windsors. In the absence of anything really worth admiring, such as Diana's tireless efforts on behalf of the young, the weak, the sick, the poor and the underprivileged, the British nation, including its media, has been hailing every tiny royal wave, every ribbon cut, every glimpse of a speeding limousine or horse-drawn carriage as a major event, as so much proof of the superior worthiness of those who rule them. No, the British have collectively contributed to the dehumanisation of the royals by blind adulation based on pomp rather than substance. A nation loves its queen without demanding proof that she loves them back. Diana changed all that, of course. She introduced the hitherto unknown concept of a rich royal, a figure of fairy tale and legend, actually doing something useful and getting her hands dirty. In doing so, she showed us what being royal is all about. It's not about pomp and pageantry for the tourists. It's about providing inspiration, moral leadership, and above all, about caring.
Your candles burned out long before.
The best-selling record of all time, and one forever linked with the Diana legend. This century has had its share of legendary figures, and in 97, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Marshall Plan, which led to the post-war recovery of Western Europe. America's George Marshall, remembered with gratitude, and his country's delegation headed by President Clinton. There were a lot of speeches that week, but it was Hillary Clinton speaking at Amsterdam University who grabbed the headlines with her sly humor.
My husband, as a student in England, often came to Amsterdam and traveled through the Netherlands, and ever since I met him, he's been talking about how we would return here together. Unfortunately, it is such an official visit that we will not be able to enjoy the many activities that he enjoyed as a student. But I hope to return when we don't have quite such an entourage with us sometime in the future.
Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind. Happy anniversary, baby. Got you on my mind.
This is it. It's the open day. I'm here outside the front of our building. It is a glorious sunny day. Crowds of people are wandering around from stand to stall, listening to a bit of music, having a hapia, a little snack here and a drink there.
Yeah.
June 97, Louise Williams reporting on our 50th anniversary open day party. 20,000 visitors, and for entertainment, the most popular Dutch singer of the decade, Marco Borsato.
Steeds als ik je zie lopen, dan gaat de hemel een klein beetje open. Sterren je laten verbleken, met je ogen die altijd stralen. Jij kan de zon laten schijnen. En de wolken verdwijnen. En als je lacht, lacht heel de wereld mee. De meeste dromen zijn er nog. Maar als ik wakker word naast jou, dan droom ik nog. Ik voel je adem en zie je gezicht. Je bent een droom die naast me ligt. Je kijkt me aan en trek je uit. Eén keer in de zoveel tijd komen door.
And so to the rhythm of our times, Radio Netherlands, and in particular this English language service, can look back on a half century of achievement with pride. In the mid-90s, we reorganized and equipped ourselves to do a better job in a rapidly changing media landscape. As a consequence, we terminated direct broadcasts in French, Portuguese and Arabic, and introduced new technology that has brought meaning to the lives of many technicians. Within the English department, our Africa and Asia services disappeared, as our programs looked at all aspects of development in global societies. Like other international broadcasters, we are diversifying the ways we distribute our programs: direct satellite broadcasts, rebroadcasting on local stations, and the internet are ways we're reaching new audiences. All of this has diminished the importance of shortwave, or has it? Jonathan Marks, Director of Programs.
Shortwave has its limitations. It also has its advantages in the sense it's very direct. People are looking at alternatives to shortwave. One of them may be satellite delivery. The other may be, in fact, to digitize the shortwave system itself. At the moment, nobody really knows, and there is still no alternative to trying to reach people on the move living in foreign countries. The only way you can do that at the moment is via traditional shortwave.
And as a veteran shortwave broadcaster, that's music to my ears. For the past half century, an army of dedicated men and women, great talented people, have shaped the voice of this house with integrity, warmth, wit, and that personal touch which has been passed on to the new generation, and which will remain the hallmark of Radio Netherlands. And one other quality that sets us apart from other international broadcasters.
I think of the word emotion. If you listen to a lot of international broadcasting, it is totally devoid of emotion. And one thing that we've done, certainly within the English department, and I think other departments within Radio Netherlands too, is to realise that radio is emotion. It's something you can hear if you listen to domestic stations in Latin America. There's that enormous drive and energy there, and people are sharing things. And I think that's what we've managed to do in the international broadcasting world, because we are independent, because we're not sitting there with some political axe to grind. We are able to share our emotions.
Touch is something we often take for granted. But when we're deprived of it, we miss it cruelly. I know that even now, at this mature age, when I'm sick, there's nothing I want quite so much as my mother's hand on my forehead, the best balm in the world. Old people who've been widowed for some time often suffer from years of not being touched. And torturers the world over know full well that even the most normal adults can crack under the agony of solitary confinement. We are a species who need each other. We need to be held by our parents, kissed by our friends, stroked by our lovers. The next time you nuzzle the fragrant head of a baby or caress the velvet skin of someone you're attracted to, ask yourself if there's anything else in the world you'd rather be doing at that moment.
Inevitably, the question is, where do we go from here? The next millennium is my hope, and that of millions of listeners whose support and appreciation has brought us through our first half century. No one can predict the future. There are no certainties, as this last decade of the 20th century has illustrated all too well. So it's worth remembering the wise words of that old Chinese sage, Confucius, who said, The only certainty is change.
That was the final program in our 8-part series celebrating the 50th anniversary of Radio Netherlands. Technical production, Ronald Hoffman. Research and script advisor, Luke Lucas. And the series was written and produced by Pete Myers.